An insurance company versus Sabre Holdings Corporation, cause number 214-130-CV. If the clerk will announce counsel, who'll be arguing today?
May I please report, this is Joseph Collins to argue for the appellant, Mr. David Keltner to argue for the appellant.
All right, Mr. Powers.
May it please the court, and good morning. Your Honors, this is a coverage dispute involving an excess errors and omissions policy, and the parties agree that Texas law applies. The claim relates to Sabre's operations as an online travel agent. The claims first arose in late December 2004. Sabre and its competitors were sued for improprieties in charging hotel tax. Illinois Union, my client, issued an excess policy that followed form to an AIG primary policy. A follow form excess policy incorporates terms from the primary unless there's a direct conflict between the two forms. The policy periods for both policies were March 15, 2004 to March 15, 2005. Sabre's broker reported the claim to AIG before that policy expired. But the claims were not reported to Illinois Union until 5 years after the deadline. Illinois Union disclaimed coverage because of the late reporting of the claim. The primary policy had a $15 million limit in excess of a $5 million retention, and the excess policy provided an additional $5 million limit. Sabre's defense costs in the hotel tax cases exceed the excess policy limit. So the central issue on this appeal is whether Sabre's reporting of the claim past the reporting deadline bars recovery of its defense costs under the excess policy. Now, contrary to Sabre's opposition brief, the claims made coverages under the primary policy provide claims made and reported coverage. The primary is a ProTech modular edition policy. It contains four coverage modules that provide four different types of technology-related coverages on either an occurrence basis or a claims-made and reported basis. The claims-made and reported nature of the coverage is established in the declarations, in the insuring agreement, and in the coverage modules that provide claims-made coverage. The declarations acknowledge that the coverage is not exclusively claims-made because of the occurrence-based coverages. It provides that certain liability coverage parts of this policy are limited to liability for claims that are first made against the insured during the policy period and are reported in writing to the insurer as required. Here, the coverage was targeted by the broker and acknowledged by AIG under the miscellaneous professional liability coverage module, otherwise known as the MPL module, and that provides errors and omissions coverage for online travel operations. All of the modules providing claims made coverage have the same warning in capital letters. This coverage module is written on a claims made and reported basis. Now, the insuring agreement explains what claims made and reported means. It says all claims made and reported coverage applies, quote, solely with respect to claims first made against an insured and reported to us during the policy period or any applicable extended reporting period. Now, the extended reporting periods are not in play here. It's just the end of the policy period that determines the reporting deadline. But those three provisions interlock to establish that the only claims made coverage afforded by the policy is claims made and reported. Under Texas law, the late reporting of claims under a claims made and reported policy nullifies coverage. There are legitimate commercial reasons for that. It's not a mere technical trap for unwary insureds. The Texas Supreme Court in Prodigy recognized the economic importance of enforcing temporal reporting deadlines in claims made and reported policies by contrasting them with occurrence policies. Occurrence policies cover incidents arising during the policy period, regardless of when the claims are made. It creates decades-long exposure beyond the policy expiration date. The insurers have to charge higher premiums to accommodate for that long tail exposure. Claims made and reported policies only cover claims that are made and reported during the policy period. At the expiration of the reporting deadline, that's it. The insurer faces no liability exposure other than for covered claims that have been reported by the deadline. This allows, and Prodigy recognized this, this allows insurers to calculate risks and premiums with greater precision, eliminate long tail exposure, and offer coverage at reduced premiums compared to occurrence-based coverages. Since recognition of coverage for late reported claims undermines the elimination of long tail exposure, Texas permits disclaimers without a showing of prejudice on late reported claims. Now, turning to the excess policy language, the claims made insuring agreements of the primary policy, which include the reporting deadlines, are incorporated by reference into the excess policy through certain follow form provisions in that policy, and they are also incorporated by reference through the notice provisions in the excess policy. The insuring clause of the excess policy provides that, quote, subject to all terms, definitions, conditions, exclusions, and limitations of this policy, the insurer agrees to provide insurance coverage to the insureds in accordance with the terms, definitions, conditions, exclusions, and limitations of the followed policy, except as otherwise provided herein. Now, under Texas law, absent clear terms in an excess policy that are in direct conflict with the claims made and reported limitations in the insuring agreements of the primary policy, those limitations must be enforced. There is nothing in the excess policy that removes the requirement imposed by the primary policy that claims be reported during the policy period in order to be covered. In fact, the notice reporting requirements from the primary policy dovetail with the notice provisions in the excess policy. The notice provisions in the excess state, all notices under this policy shall be given as provided in the followed policy and shall be properly addressed to the appropriate party at the respective address shown in the declarations. Now that language, all notices under this policy shall be given as provided in the followed policy, means that if the primary requires Sabre to give notice to the primary insurer of a claim before the policy expiration date, then the excess insurer must be provided with the same notice before the same deadline. The same is true for the notice as soon as practicable provision, which is not at issue in this case. The only material difference between the notice provisions in the primary and those in the excess is that the excess notice provisions require that notice under the excess policy be given to ACE at its claim department in New York. The notice requirement in the excess is fully consistent with an excess follow form policy that incorporates claims made and reported provisions, including a requirement that the claims be reported prior to expiration of the reporting deadline in order to be covered. The provision also undercuts Sabre's arguments that the excess policy was designed to permit notice of claims after the reporting deadline, because there's nothing in the primary policy that lets you do that.
But isn't there something in the excess policy that maybe allows you to do that, where it talks about the specific notice required of exhaustion of the underlying limits?
Well, that's true in any excess policy. It's going to be sitting atop, whether it's an occurrence policy or a claims made policy, it's going to be sitting on top of another set of limits that have to be exhausted before you can get into that coverage. But it's not the exhaustion that triggers, I mean, that's part of what triggers it, but you have to give the notice of that claim before the end of the reporting period, according to the insuring agreement that was incorporated by reference.
But isn't the likelihood of the actual exhaustion of the underlying policy, isn't that highly unlikely within the one-year time period of the policy?
Oh, absolutely. But if you do what you're supposed to do on any claims made policy, whether it's a primary or an excess, and you report the claim before the end of the policy period, which they clearly should have done here, then you're protected. You know, it may take 3 or 4 years before you're finally, or in this case, 8 years before you finally get to a point of exhaustion. But the excess claims made and reported insurer has the same interest in closing its books at the end of the policy period as the primary does, because you don't want to create that long tail exposure, and that's what you're doing here when you allow late reporting of claims, whether it's under a primary or an excess. So turning to the notice of exhaustion of the aggregate limit condition, first of all, it's a condition precedent. It's not a term saying we're changing the insuring agreement to eliminate the reporting requirement. It's a condition precedent. The way you write insurance policies is you start out with an insuring agreement that defines the broad scope of the coverage. You have exclusions that narrow the coverage. Exclusion, you can't create broader coverage with exclusions. You can only narrow it. A condition precedent is an obstacle. It's something you have. First, you have to have a claim that's covered by the insuring agreement, and you don't have that here because it wasn't reported. But a condition precedent is an obstacle to getting what you're entitled to under the insuring agreement. So if you don't satisfy, you know, if you're late in giving notice, but the claim is otherwise covered, that could potentially defeat coverage. But you can't use a condition precedent to expand coverage. It's nonsensical. But secondly, there are two other reasons why that condition doesn't apply. There's no conflict between this provision and the claim reporting deadline because that condition has nothing to do with the reporting of claims. It simply requires the insured to give notice to the excess insurer of the exhaustion of aggregate limits. And the purpose of that is because if a primary aggregate is exhausted, the excess insurer has to drop down and defend the claim. So it wants to know if that happens so that, you know, it can deal with that. Secondly, Sabre mistakenly relies on cases construing excess occurrence-based policies to support its contention that the excess permits the reporting of claims upon exhaustion. The trigger point of an occurrence-based liability policy is an incident or occurrence that happens during the policy period, not when the claims are reported. Notice under a primary occurrence-based policy is given as soon as practicable. For excess occurrence-based policies, it's when it becomes reasonably clear that the damages will exceed the primary limits. Now that permits reporting of claims under occurrence policies well after policy expiration and creates the type of long-term exposure that's the antithesis of claims made and reported policies. Now, a claims made and reported excess insurer has just as much of an interest in closing its books at the end of the reporting period as a claims made and reported primary insurer. The claim reporting deadline under both policies and excess policies established the means for that certainty. The notice of aggregate exhaustion provision does not conflict with the reporting limitations. It simply applies to claims that were timely reported where the aggregate underlying limits later become exhausted. So we've talked about that. Turning to this doctrine of constructive notice, Sabre tries to excuse its failure to report the claim before the reporting deadline by contending that Illinois Union was not prejudiced by delay because it had notice of the claims against Sabre through other sources. Now, that argument overlooks the importance of the reporting deadline in eliminating long-tail coverage under claims made and reported policies. An insurer should not be charged with receiving timely notice of a claim simply because it learns that an insured that did not report the claim is embroiled as a co-defendant in a suit with one that did. As I said, if an insured has a multi-layered claims made and reported policy, should be putting all layers on notice of the claim before the end of the reporting period rather than risk forfeiture. That didn't happen here for reasons that remain a mystery. There are a number of reasons why an insured might choose not to do that. It might be an additional insured under another policy. It may justifiably believe that the claim will never reach the excess layer. It may not want to see its excess premiums increased, or it might have forgotten about the policy. Those are all matters under the control of the insured, and the insurer should not be penalized by having its claims made and reported policy converted into a long-tail policy when an insured reports a claim late due to oversight or conscious decision. For that reason, Texas courts simply do not permit insureds to undermine the important financial benefits associated with the claims made and reported policy form by permitting the late reporting of claims under a theory of constructive notice. And for those reasons, we ask that the court reverse summary judgment and grant it in favor of Illinois Union. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Powers. Mr. Keltner.
Thank you, Your Honor. Illinois Union denies coverage even though it's stipulated that but for its alleged notice deficiency, its policy provides complete coverage. Second, it also stipulated it had actual knowledge of the third-party claim during the policy period and had been provided knowledge of it through the defense of one of our competitor insureds in which it was defending. And it admits it presented no evidence that would indicate prejudice, but still says it can cancel the policy. It's wrong about all three. The real truth of the matter is their whole case is based on three false premises. I'm going to divide my argument in talking about each of them. First, they say that notice obligations for Sabre are controlled by the primary policy. That's not true. They're provided by the excess, and I think his argument just a moment ago demonstrated that to you. Second, that the professional liability coverage, the MPL, they say is a claims made and reported policy. I'm going to demonstrate by policy provisions to you that it is not. And finally, they say that prejudice makes no difference in these situations. I'm going to show you Supreme Court precedent that says that's not right as well. This is a construction case, and the general rules of construction applies. This court doesn't need to hear those from me, but there are one or two that will drive the court's decision. First is, while you have to harmonize, there's no doubt about that, specific provisions control over more general. That's Judge Livingston, your opinion in Clark versus Cotton and Schmidt. And that applies to insurance policies as well as to other contexts. Also, there's no doubt that the Texas Supreme Court has repeatedly said that if there are two reasonable interpretations, you have to side with the insured and in favor of coverage. In other words, if the insured has a reasonable interpretation, they win. And that's especially true in notice and reporting provisions, so says the Supreme Court in the PAJ versus Hanover Insurance case. Finally, if there are multiple coverages in the same policy as there are in this case, and there are differences between the coverages, the courts deem those distinctions to be intentional. That's the Lassiter case decided by John McBride, citing Texas law. Illinois Union talked primarily about the excess policy. That is in tab A of my oral argument handout, and I'm going to refer that to you. Section 2 on page 373, and by the way, the page numbers are the clerk's record page numbers, basically says that four times that the excess policy only drops down and presents coverage once there is exhaustion. Four times in Article 2. Next page, 373. What notice is required? As just Chief Justice Livingston pointed out, it is of exhaustion. Only exhaustion. That's what triggers the excess policy. That is in item 4D, and does it say claims made and reported? It does not. It says that she'll give insurers notice as soon as practicable after the exhaustion of the primary policy. It's undisputed that we gave notice before that, 18 months before exhaustion, warning it was about to be exhausted, and then later when exhaustion occurred. So no doubt that's the issue. Here's what their real argument is, and their argument in front of you today is a little bit different from their brief, but what they say in the brief is, well, that all may be true, but that really, you have to read that back with the general provisions 5C on the same page. And 5C says, all notices under this policy shall be given as provided in the follow policy. That says, that creates a deadline for presenting notices. Now, does it say that? No. Mr. Powers said something else. And it's not in the policy. He just told you that all notices required by the primary must be given by the excess carrier. Where does that say that? It doesn't. That's not in here. It's easy to say and simple to say, and in fact, in some of the specimen policies at tab G, something like that is said, but it wasn't said in this policy. But look at look at what he's saying in 5C. By the way, notice it's not a condition precedent, so it couldn't give rise to forfeiture without a showing of prejudice. But look what it says. All notices of what? Under this policy. There are only two notices required under the excess policy. That's under 4C and D. D is exhaustion we just talked about, and C is a change in the underlying policy, and there is a deadline on that, 30 days. They knew how to do it if they wanted to create a deadline for exhaustion. They just didn't. And that dooms their case. Now, C, I think, is terribly important because it shows you can put a deadline in and there's not one within exhaustion. Remember the Lassiter case. If there are two coverages with different provisions, limitations in one and not the other, there's a legal consequence. That's deemed to be intentional. Also, there is not a forfeiture clause, and that is very important in their 5C. Therefore, it could not give rise, and I'm going to say forfeiture, a condition precedent clause is not in here, so it couldn't give rise to forfeiture under the Prodigy case. So the conclusion here is there are other reasonable interpretations. The most reasonable interpretation, I think, is that the notices discussed in 5C are the two notices in the excess policy, change of the underlying in 4C, and exhaustion under 4D, and that's all that they are talking about. And the reference to the following policy is actually to Clause 8 of the policy, which says what the particular of the notice must be, in writing, addressed, what documents submitted, and the like. Now, we think that ends your inquiry. We think that on that alone, and their presentation is almost totally on the excess policy this morning, that ends the inquiry and the summary judgment was properly granted. If, on the other hand, the court thinks that the primary policy is important, it is not a claims made and reported policy, and I can demonstrate to you why it's not. Now remember, claims made and reported are different kinds of policies. The Supreme Court said that in Prodigy and explained those differences. Richard Sheridan, their corporate representative at trial, and also Michael Freed, the man who adjusted this case, said the exact same thing at trial, and the testimony is in tab H and I of this handout. Interestingly, the specimen policies at tab G are the policies not used in this case, but policies that were presented in discovery in other cases, and those are true claims made and reported policies, and they don't look anything like this policy at all. This policy says that there are five parts: an application, a deck page, a base policy, and four insurance modules, and eight endorsements. The base policy was not negotiated. The modules were negotiated, and there's no doubt that the endorsements were bargained for. Now, let's look at each of them. And in tab B, and this is the primary policy, I'm going to first take you to the application, because the policy says it's important. And what does the application say? It says if the policy is issued, it'll be made on a claims-made basis, not claims made and reported. Declarations page, which is the first in tab B, on page 391. What does it say? Does it say claims made and reported? It does not. It says claims made and reported in writing to the insured as required. Well, where do I go to find out what is required? Well, to determine what is required, you go to the notice provision. Now, that's a bold statement on my part. How come Keltner gets to say where you go? I didn't. The Texas Supreme Court did, and it did it twice, once in Prodigy at page 380, and once at XL Specialty, page 878. It says that is where you go. Any doubt about that, Richard Sheridan, their corporate rep, said the exact same thing. So we have to go in tab B to what the notice is. And it actually is clause 7, but clause 7 was amended by endorsement 5. Now, their theory is that somehow endorsement 5 has to be blended into and supplements the rest of the policy. Let's look at clause 5, and this is on page 430, and I'm going to read it to you. It says that clause 7, subparagraph 2 of paragraph B is deleted, not supplemented, deleted, and it is replaced, not supplemented, replaced. So that's what it intended to do. Now, I've got to tell you some bad stuff for our case. Item 2's heading says, for any and all coverages under this policy afforded on a claims made and reported basis. That's item 2 on page 430. But then it defines what it means by on a claims made and reported basis. That is 2A. Please look at 2A. Does it say claims made and reported during the policy period? No. It doesn't say that at all. When do you have to report? As soon as practicable. That's the only provision. Now, no doubt it is a condition precedent, but it isn't in the reporting, in the policy period. Interestingly, just oppose that with 2C on the same page, on 430. It's giving a different notice, not of the claim, but of a change of circumstances during the policy that might affect eventually result in a claim. Under 2C, you have to give notice during the policy period. For 2A, you don't. 2C, you do. They knew how to say it if they meant it, and that was the bargain the policy struck, or the party struck, they just didn't do it here. Now, again, this is the negotiated part of the policy, and reporting means of a claim as soon as practicable. Nonetheless, what Illinois Union really claims is that there's one sentence that is back in the first part of the policy on page 395, clause 2, that is the base policy that was not negotiated, and that it really controls everything. But I'm going to ask you to turn to that and go back to page 395, and I will read this to you. It is the base policy, item 2. And here's what it says. It says exactly what they say, I have to admit, but they left out the last part. And the last part is subject to other terms, conditions, and exclusions and limitations in this policy. Endorsement 5-2A is one of those. And it had to be that way. And the way that Mr. Powers explained to you said why. This says claims made and reported, but there are two occurrence modules. Half the insurance given in this policy is occurrence. Claims made and reported cannot, as we know from Prodigy and XL, possibly apply to an occurrence policy. That's why everything else had to change later. Now, the other thing is, can a notice provision change the scope of policy? Yes, it can. There, Michael Freed, the adjuster on this case, said so. And he said so, if you look at tab D, is his testimony that was part of the summary judgment. And he said, yes, notice provisions can expand coverage. He was asked, well, what does soon as practical mean? This is tab E. And what he said is, soon as practical means within a reasonable period of time. And the real problem in this case, he never looked at endorsement 5. He can't recall ever seeing it. He can't even recall ever seeing the module. The only thing he looked at was the insurance agreement. And the Texas Supreme Court in Prodigy and XL says you look to the notice provisions. He also says you got to blend this all together. I don't see that. It won't work for the reasons I said. You can't blend the claims made and reported to a negotiated part of the policy that describes specifically what the notice is. Now remember, the worst problem they have is endorsement 5-2C, which does have a policy period listed in it, and 2A on claims does not. Let's talk very quickly about prejudice as my time is about to expire. The law is very clear. PAJ, Prodigy, XL Specialty, all cases from the Supreme Court say as soon as practical language, and that kind of language won't deal with a forfeiture without showing notice. You got to have something that is a condition precedent to do that. There is no condition precedent here in claims made and reported, not a one. They admit that they have no evidence of prejudice. They admit that they had notice of this claim during the policy period and had actual notice of it. And in fact, their internal memos say, we're next up after the primary is exhausted. So based on that, we'd ask you to affirm the trial court summary judgment.
Thank you, Mr. Keltner. Mr. Powers.
Thank you, Your Honor. What Saber overlooks is that the claims made and reported requirement appears in the insuring agreement for all claims made coverage under this policy. So that's in the module. That didn't get mentioned. You can put a claims made limitation in a notice condition. That's what they did in Prodigy, and they called that a claims made and reported policy. Here they put it in the insuring agreement. It makes more sense in the insuring agreement because it's clear that it's a limitation on the coverage.
Or is it in the insuring agreement, Mr. Power?
As I mentioned, there's three components to this policy. There's the declarations, there's the insuring agreement, which explains what claims made and reported is. It says it has to be a claim that's first made during the policy period and reported to us in writing during the policy period.
I'm talking about where it is in the record, if you know the page.
Well, if you look at my handout, it appears on under insuring agreement, and talking about the primary policy.
Okay, I'll find it.
But each of the coverage modules that provide claims made coverage say it's given on a claims made and reported basis. So if you want to put that limitation in a condition, you can, and it'll still be enforced. But here it's in the insuring agreement, and the Texas courts enforce those insuring agreements. So the notice provision here is irrelevant because the notice provision applies to claims made and reported policies. So if it hasn't been reported, the notice condition, which is just a condition, is irrelevant because you haven't gotten the claim within the insuring agreement. The other thing that the policy says is that the coverage under the excess policy cannot be any broader than what's provided under the primary. Well, if you eliminate the reporting condition, you're opening up this policy to long-tail coverage, which is what happened here. You have a claim that's not reported until 5 years after the expiration of the policy. And the notice clause in the excess policy says all notices under this policy, this is in the excess policy, they're talking about all notices under the excess policy shall be given as provided in the followed policy, which is the primary policy, and which only provides for notice during the policy period, before the end of the policy period, and as soon as practicable. So those provisions are incorporated. This notice clause it can't be referring to the exhaustion provision in the excess policy because it's saying all notices under this policy shall be given as provided in the followed policy. The exhaustion condition isn't in the primary policy. It's just in the excess. So what they're talking about here are the notices of claims being required during the policy period, as well as notice as soon as practicable, which has no relevance here because they didn't report it on time. And again, it's significant that the insuring clause in the excess policy says the coverage can't be broader than it is under the primary policy, because the whole purpose of a claims made policy is to cut off all claims as of the deadline so the underwriter can close the books on the claims immediately. And if you open it up for any reason under any other theory, you're turning it into a long tail occurrence type policy. So those are the fundamental reasons why this case should be.
But you do agree that there are two modules that were written on an occurrence basis?
They're not contending that they apply here.
Right.
They're saying this is a claims-made coverage that we're making the claim under. We just don't have to report it the way you say we have to report it. So, and the way the wording is it appears in the declarations recognizes that there can be other types of coverages besides claims made. But the only claims made coverage here is claims made and reported based on the modules and based on the insuring agreement when they're read together. Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. Mr. Keltner, thank you. We appreciate all of your arguments and all of counsel being here for arguments and all of your briefing in this matter. Your case is now submitted, so you are excused. We'll recess for 10 minutes and pick back up with our third case.
All right. Thank you.